Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and with me today is Michael Gamblin. I'm so glad to have the producer and editor of our shows take a little bit of time so you can hear his voice and get a feeling for his personality. He really likes to be behind the scenes, but he's the other half of me that I'm not, and I'm here to tell you that no show would ever be broadcast without his ministry. Today's show is about the resources that NASA has for education. They originally started with a museum in a box series, and now that series literally fills a warehouse. So it's all become digital. You can go to nasa.gov, that's NASA.gov, and you can find Museum in a Box, and those things are free for your family to use. So we're going to go through a couple of things that we did recently in conjunction with that. So welcome, Michael, for being here with me today.
Well, thank you so very much. My first question for you is, why the title, Activities Before Contents? Explain now, that a little bit that
yeah,
to us.
It's a whole new idea. We always would give our students a lot of content. It might be in the form of a lecture. It might be in the form of a movie. And then we would do an activity to reinforce what we had done in content. We began to run into trouble. For example, remember in the days before air conditioning in your cars? Michael, did you ever go and experience that drive through the countryside or maybe even in the city where your parents allowed the windows of the car to be rolled down and you could put your hand out and feel the air pressure on your hand?
Yes, you did. Played like you had an airplane you're flying.
You did. And you really were experiencing the force of air pressure and the lift. And then it, as you turn your hand down so far, it pushed your hand down. Then you put your hand up and you could really play airplane. Well, nowadays we have air conditioners in our cars and families don't feel like it's very safe for their children to be hanging any appendages out the windows. And we discovered that kids haven't had that experience that we take for granted. That's just an example of trying to bring an experience to a child in the form of an activity before we start making them really memorize what that activity, I mean, what the content is that we want them to learn.
Is another word for activity actually hands-on? Is that what you're calling the activity?
Yes, a hands-on experiential learning of some sort. And we always touted that experiential learning, the students had the opportunity to really learn because all of their senses were involved with the learning. They were smelling, tasting, handling, hearing this, and it became really part of them, whereas just having someone talk to you, it literally goes in one ear and out the other, if it even goes in your ears. I don't know.
Well, that brings up another point. What about vocabulary? What if you don't know the words that the teacher is using during the activity?
Well, and this is up for debate. You know, really, should we make sure that our students know the vocabulary before we start talking those words? It's like a language. Science has a lot of vocabulary that's just unique to the subject of science, as does math. So my idea is that we need to make sure that the words we're talking about. Not only do our students understand, but they also can use the words themselves in talking back to us. So I like to do, it's kind of like an inventory where you would take the major scientific words that you're going to be using, and you could set it up in boxes. And then in each box, there might be like a little question. Yes, I've heard of this word, or no, I've never heard of this word. Maybe the first choice would be, no, I've never heard of this word. Yes, I've heard of this word. I think I know what this word means, and I know what this word means. So you could take a little inventory among your students and actually know if they understand and can use the words that you plan to use in that lesson. So vocabulary is huge because it's the way we communicate, even when we are doing the hands-on learning or experiential learning or activity, whatever someone wants to call it. Even as we're doing that, our students need to be hearing those words and they need to be understanding those words.
Well, that brings up another question also. What grade level are you talking about? Can this be done through all 8, 12 grades? You know, is there a place where it best fits versus, or can you take and change this and fix it so every grade level can work the same way?
I think, of course, you know, for a younger child, it would be more simplified and you might not be using the scientific words as much, but you would still be using that. You'd still be using words that conveyed that meaning. For example, when you're talking about propulsion and thrust, you would be able to show children, and young children, believe it or not, are sponges. They actually can learn if we can present it in a way that they can handle it. So I wouldn't be having them write vocabulary, but we certainly would be talking about it and looking at pictures that helped to define what we were talking about. And it's really cute to see these little kids talking with more scientific terms. It's hilarious. And they know what they mean. They know what they mean better than I knew what they meant when I was in academy.
Speaking of scientific terms, what does NASA, N-A-S-A, what does that mean?
Well, that's a good question. It has to do with the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. So they're the ones that have been around for a long time, National Aeronautics and Space Administration, and they originally had, they were responsible for, you know, getting man to the moon and so many of the inventions that we have today.
Well, what does NASA have to offer in the way of resources and those types of lessons?
Well, NASA has spent a lot of time on education. They're very heavily involved in STEM, scientific, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So they have always been involved in education. We used to send teachers down, and the teachers themselves would get involved with, you know, how to become an astronaut. But an astronaut is really a small portion of what's done. We have flight, and flight is always going to be a part of our lives. And NASA has worked with a lot of educators to provide this Museum in a Box series.
Well, we're going to take a break right here. But when we come back, we're going to look at three activities that are built on the idea of activity before contents. We'll be right back.
If you missed part of today's show, you'd like a copy for yourself or to share with a friend, then please go to our website, lifetalk.net, and click the podcast page. All of LifeTalk's live interactive talk shows are posted on our site and are free for you at any time. If you don't have an internet connection or you just want a compact disc of today's show, call 800-775-4673 with your credit card ready, because you'll be asked for a small donation to help cover our costs. Also, we'd like to hear what you thought of today's show. Please send us an email, include the title of the show on the subject line, and send that email to office@lifetalk.net. That's office@lifetalk.net.
Welcome back. I'm talking to Dr. Rose Gamblin about the paradigm shift from doing content and then an activity with students to doing the activity first.
Okay, so let's talk about wanting our students to learn the parts of a plane, an airplane. Now, I remember as a young girl not being able to afford to fly, but now most of our students have had the opportunity to fly. And what do they need to know about the parts of an airplane, just like knowing the parts of a car, because it's part of our culture, and it's wonderful that our students can sound intelligent. Now, one of the things that we did in our workshop with NASA was we were given this worksheet of the parts of an airplane, and it was hilarious because we looked at that and we could work in groups. And I said, you know, let's first do everything that we know. We know the windshield. In fact, Mr. Gamblin, don't look at the answers. See if you could figure out the parts of an airplane. So I'm doing a simulation here with Mr. Gamblin. I'm pretending like he's in the third grade, and I've handed him this outline of a passenger jet, and he's going to figure out.
Well, the first one I see looks like the fuselage, which is the body of the plane.
That's correct.
The second one is pointing to the windshield, where the pilots look out.
Mm-hmm.
The third one I would call the cockpit, because that's the whole area that they fly the plane from.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth one looks like the port side engine.
Mm-hmm.
Five would be the port side landing gear. Let's see, where's number six at?
We got stuck on the ailerons and the...
That I do not know, but the number six looks like the... it's part of the tail fin assembly. I'm not sure exactly what to call that.
It's another Oz word. Like fuselage, it's the empennage.
Empennage, okay. Number seven is one of the rudders, and I don't know if it's the elevator or the, what's the other one? But yeah, this,
mm-hmm.
I'll look at the answer, seven. The
Aerolon?
Aerolon.
And I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Oh, wait a minute. No, number seven is elevator.
Elevator.
And number 10 is the Aerolon, which is on the wings. So, but it goes through several more here, which I do not know all those parts. I just know the a few parts of them there.
Yes, and we had problems with the empennage because it is actually the whole back side of the airplane. It's not like the fuselage is the first general part of the airplane, and then
the
empennage
sit.
Is the back, which includes the two little back wings and the back tail. And the little wings that go up, they're called winglets. I didn't know that they had a name, but as we've been flying, we've been seeing that a lot of the airplanes have on their big wing a little dip and
upturn.
It goes up, and it's called a winglet. And NASA, with experimenting with wind pressure and everything, found that dramatically improved the airplane. So those kinds of things you would see what the children knew. And of course, if they've already been on an airplane, yay, then they've already had the whole purpose of having the activity before the content is trying to get them to have that experiential learning. Now, what if they haven't? This is where just having the children who have been in an airplane describe some of the feelings that they felt, and that would be the next best thing, because you probably can't afford to take them all on an airplane. I wanted to talk about the winglets because I brought that up. So the winglet is its whole purpose is to reduce the drag or air resistance that the wing produces as it pushes through the air. And this allows the airplane to fly faster, but it also means that the airplane burns less fuel, so it can go longer. Isn't that cool? Just yes. a little dip up in the wing does all of that. Okay, so this particular museum in the box activity, which is based on plane parts, takes about 1 hour, and the objective is that the students will learn about the abilities of technology design and understanding about how science and technology helps not only you to identify individual aircraft components, but you'll see that it's across, doesn't matter who manufactured the airplane, they have all the basic same components.
Give us some examples of some type of activity you can do in this lesson before you start the content.
Well, one fun thing, you know, you can get little cheap foam airplanes, the Dollar General store, or you can get those devices. It's just a propeller, and you push it up really quickly, and then you can see the propeller going around and around. So anything that you could provide hands-on on a small model with an airplane, you can even buy those balsam airplanes that have a rubber band, and you wind the rubber band and it makes the propeller go. So those kinds of things would be the activity that you would do before really getting into all the content. And another thing that I like to do is, you know, we've handled the vocabulary for this particular activity or this particular thematic unit on plane parts. But I like to know where I'm headed, because as I'm going through an activity, I can really focus. For example, as we're looking at our small little airplanes, we can talk about pitch, we could talk about roll, and we could talk about yaw. And we could talk about the components in the aircraft that helped it do one thing or another, and all of that. And then use the language that would go with it, so that by the time we got to where the students actually had to do a worksheet, it was part of, they knew it. And I like that. I think every teacher should have in mind the assessment that they're going to use. So as they do the experimenting and do the activity and the content, by the time the child goes to fill in the worksheet or do the quiz, it's so easy. I love it when my students say, "Yeah, it's so easy. I know I've done my job."
What type of time frame are we talking about here as you do these activities? Do you try to keep them to like a half hour, an hour, or can they be an all-day project? What are you thinking in that respect as you go through these activities?
Well, I like to have a, you know, where one day might be all about something, once in a while have an emphasis day. But just our human nature, we get tired easily. And students' attention spans, you can stay on the same subject, but probably about 20 minutes. So if you're doing an activity, you do the activity for 20 minutes, and then you go to maybe the vocabulary or vice versa. You do the vocabulary, 20 minutes. You can do lots of fun things with vocabulary. You can do games. You can have them make little PowerPoints and describe the different things. And you can have the vocabulary really be a fun thing. And then you can do the activity. And then by then you're incorporating everything you learned with the vocabulary into the activity. And then from the activity, you can go to content. And I like to include actual little video clips and interactive lecture. And then from there, go to the assessment and come back to it again, you know, another day.
Can you describe us one more of the museum in a box activity for our listeners?
Okay, so this particular lesson that I'm going to describe is called Four Forces, and it's the principle of flight. And some of the things that you would need for this activity would be balloons and a stopwatch, a scale, and two balls of similar size but different weights. For example, a golf ball and a ping pong ball. You could use a fan and an umbrella and a balloon pump. I like better than blowing it up yourself, because then you can actually be very consistent and copy paper about eight sheets. What you're going to do is you're teaching lift, thrust, drag, and weight. These four forces were really brought to us by Sir Isaac Newton. Thrust, lift, drag, and weight. And the beautiful thing about museum in a box is it gives a lot of information for the teacher. And, you know, so it's simple so that you can understand it. And then it tells you everything that you need to do, tells you the history behind it, the mathematics behind it. And then you can just, in this particular one, you set up a station for each. You set up a station for thrust, a station for drag, a station for weight, and a station for lift. And you can have your students go through this activity. And then you start discussing what they learned in each activity. It's just wonderful, a wonderful way, and another great example of doing the learning experience prior to really pushing the content. And I know we've run out of time. I can't believe it. But that's how exciting it is when you think about learning. And thank you.
Well, could you remind our listeners again where they can go to find all this stuff? And is all these activities up on their website?
Yes, and they're by grade level. So they have activities that are appropriate for grades 5 through 8, activities that are appropriate, I should say thematic unit, because it's much more than just the activity. It includes the activity, it includes the content, it includes the assessment. And if you are interested in really touting that your class, that you're teaching STEM in your classroom, this is a great resource. So you can go to www.nasa.gov, look for Museum in a Box, or just Google Museum in a Box, and you'll come to it. It's a fantastic resource, and we can thank, I guess, our taxpayers for providing it for us, and we need to use it.
So that's www.nasa.gov.
Yes. We'll have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.